Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Cultaholic Island, where we have once again got a guest to talk about three wrestling matches that they would watch while stranded here.
And what three matches?
Oh, don't.
We just talked about it. Don't worry. I've got our three matches. I've got the three matches.
You better have your three matches. I'd be furious.
Got them written down. They're right here.
They're on. That's a phone. Don't you lie to me. It's not a pen.
You can do a lot with a phone these days. You'd be surprised.
I've heard that snakes are there now. That's exciting. We are joined today by, right, I've got the list. Mace, Marseille, Mache, Mace all caps, Dio Madden, Marcellus Black, Great Black Otaku, Beta Wooly, The Batsusama, the scariest person in the world, Clover Von Krohn, Jibo, and I think that's all of them. Brennan!
Hey, good to be here on this stranded island. How you doing?
Welcome to Cultaholic Island. Have we nailed down the name that you'll use once you're back out there?
So, you know, I think I can give it to you first, because it could change. It's subject to change.
Right.
It's subject to change.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, you know, you gotta have something that pivots from the name that people know. So I'm thinking Mace Madden is the way to go. Mace with an S, legally distinct. Madden with an E, like the video game, also legally distinct. I think we're good.
Mace Madden, I like it.
I think it's good. I think we might go with it.
So what made you come to that conclusion in the end? Is this something that you poured over for a while, or is this something
I've been stuck on it? Because like in the first couple of days, it's hectic, because you're like, okay, I need to figure out how to get this sorted. I need to get new gear ordered. I need to get a new theme song made, all of that. And then while doing all that, I'm like, wait, I can't use my name anymore. So it becomes a thing of, I had an independent name before. I have a real name. I've got a name that I'm now more known by from being on national TV with. And I think it's just dumb not to take advantage of that. So I figured what I'd go with was something that, one, is clever, because it's like a combination of things. So, you know, like the smart viewer will be like, oh, I get it. You know what I mean? Oh, it's Madden from when he was Dio Madden. It's Mace from when he was Mace. So yeah, I like to leave little bits like that.
If you've been paying attention to the Brennan lore, then you are rewarded with.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to steal on the Dark Souls of wrestling, because that was Mansoor's thing. But I leave little bits of lore on pieces of armor scattered throughout the Wrestleverse. That's all. That's what I do.
We are going to turn over some shields and find some of your lore over our time together today. We're also going to choose three wrestling matches for you to watch while stranded, metaphorically, on a desert island.
Metaphorically,
we're not literally dropping you anywhere. I feel like you've got stuff to do now.
Because I'm not trained in survival per se. So I don't know how long.
Could you light a fire?
Could I light a fire? I know what it looks like to light a fire.
It's the sticks, isn't it?
And you know what? In this scenario, I've got three wrestling matches to watch on that desert island. So that means I have something to watch it on, which is probably a cell phone, which means I can look it up.
There you go. And you certainly can't call for help because that completely shows a hole.
I don't have service.
There you go. It's otherwise a hole in the premise, which we don't expose. Now, we'll go through them one by one as we spend our time together. What would you like your first match to be then, Brennan?
So I poured over this because you asked me. You were like, okay, what three matches? And I don't want to give you like the obvious matches because I'm I'm Kino. I've got soul. I didn't want to give you the Austin Brett. That's obviously a great match. Everybody wants to watch that on a desert island. So the first one that I'm going to give to you is Kane versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 20. My first WrestleMania that I ever watched in one of my favorite matches ever. Not even really that long. Mostly entrances. But yeah, it's a banger. It's an absolute banger.
It was in the aftermath of Kane burying The Undertaker alive at Survivor Series 2003. And yeah. Then it was the return of the Dead Man, which we've been hearing about on the dirt sheets for a long while. And there it was. There it happened. Where were you when you watched this? Would you say it was your first WWE show live?
I didn't go. This was literally the first WrestleMania that I ordered and watched.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So where it has such warmth and love for me is that I didn't know that the dirt sheets were saying that the Dead Man was coming back. In fact, I didn't even know who the Dead Man was. I knew who the American Badass was from when I started watching maybe 2 years prior. So I had only experienced Motorcycle Undertaker, and I was just completely surprised, and afterwards it just led me down this rabbit hole where I started looking up everything afterwards, and I was like, wow, Undertaker's so cool. And it's one of those things where it makes you appreciate how the build to a big match is more important than like the match itself. Like by far the build. At the end of the day, the match is had, you know? I love that match to death. It reminds me of a more innocent time in my wrestling viewing career.
What led you into watching that show in the first place? Obviously, it was your first one. Had you been a wrestling fan for long at that point?
So WrestleMania 20, I might have been in middle school. I had started watching wrestling originally from, I didn't start watching it on TV. The first thing wrestling related that I got into was it wasn't SmackDown versus Raw. It was Here Comes the Pain. That was the first thing I saw. I saw Brock Lesnar on the cover like this. And I was like, yeah, I'll get that video game because I was a video gamer. I'm an anime guy. It's not my regular fare. Of children fighting God. But I was like, I'm into this. Let's check out this game. I fell in love with like the whole creator wrestler thing. I'm an avid e-fetter from when I was a kid. So I got into wrestling through the video game. And from there, I started watching it on, I started watching SmackDown on, it would have been UPN at the time. And it really took off from there. I didn't have cable in my room. So that was the only thing I could watch. And then as I gradually became more and more a fan, it led to WrestleMania 20, where I finally gained the courage to ask my parents for the $60. No, I think it was $80 because it's WrestleMania to get the pay-per-view because it sounded ridiculous in my head. It was like, Mom and Dad, can I have $80 to watch wrestling? It's like, you have wrestling on Mondays and Fridays or Thursdays. But that's how I got it.
And did they hand over the $80 simple as, or did you have to do chores or either to earn it, or they just
it wasn't the coolest
parents?
I think my parents are very cool. Mm-hmm. And I think I make them, they're a lot more strict in my head than they probably were. Because I like would put self-imposed things. If I wanted something and I was asking for something, I'd be like, I'd be very reasonable because I didn't want to offend. I didn't want to break down the relationship where I actually get stuff. So so at the time, I would ask for every other pay-per-view. So there was a long period of time where I actually went back. When the network first came out, I went back and I would see all of the odd pay-per-views that I never saw because they were, I try and set it up. So it was like, oh, I got to get the Royal Rumble. I got to get WrestleMania. I got to get Survivor Series. So I'd miss like Taboo Tuesday or something like that. Yeah, but no, my parents were great. They let me get WrestleMania and it led me down this path that led me to you today on this desert island.
I've got to pull on this. I've got to pull on this EFED thread. I've got to.
You want to know about the EFED? You want to know the EFED lore?
Brandon, I need to know. Like, so were you, was it a character that you created for an EFED? Were you playing as an existing wrestler for a start?
So I know there's multiple routes of EFED that you can go down. You can go down the route where you're playing as actual wrestlers. I was in a hybrid EFED called OCW Fed. It's still up. You can look it up. They still go. They actually produce some pretty neat stuff. They should. I hope they blow up from this. but no, what you would do is you would go into the video game. You would create a wrestler. You'd create a gimmick, a character, all that, and then during the week you would type roleplay promos to set up for matches that you would have in the game. And then at the end of the week, they would post all of the promos, and they would post the video. It was very early capture carding of gameplay. And we had set rules. They were called fair play rules because the games, they were not fairly competitive. It's not exactly, like Tekken. It's not a valid fighting game. So we would try and do stuff so it looked more like a wrestling match than just somebody stomping on somebody until their body was red and hitting a finisher.
You've got to have like a proper match. You can't
So in a way, I've been in this business for maybe 15 years. In a way, if you really think about it, I've been calling matches and putting together matches for a long time.
So who was your EFED character then?
My EFED character. So I was very big into Japanese wrestling when I got into EFEDing. So I played as a Japanese wrestler called Hideo Matsuda, and he came to America to start his career. It was like I don't even think people weren't doing that nearly as much in like the way that they're acclaimed in doing it now. Like it was before Shinsuke. It was before a lot of the guys would come over, like build a big name and kind of have a fan base and come over. So in my head, it was like, oh, this was like the idea of like the really hot Japanese act coming over and starting over in America, which kind of became the thing shortly after. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I used to love that stuff. Ran out of time when I became a dad.
And so but the memory, leave the memories alone.
It's still out there. You can find it.
You've said previously in terms of before you mentioned Japanese wrestling there, because I know that Great Muta and Eddie Guerrero are two of those that you're big fans of, which makes
that's
me
what
good
my Wikipedia
you.
Says
maybe is that a lie from Wiki?
No, that's true.
That's fine then. That's fine. I've been caught out there.
No, you were right. when I first started wrestling, and all the credit in the world to Booker T for letting me do this, because I've learned that you don't necessarily get to do whatever you want when you wrestle. And I'm excited to do whatever I want again now. But Booker let me be a big black Great Muta when I first started wrestling. So no, I very much, and we'll get to a Great Muta match on my list today. But I was very much into that. I watched it on like YouTube at the time. That was the way you watched it. It's like in 180p quality of these old matches from the 90s. And I was like, oh, this freaking rules.
It's you know you're a kid of a certain generation when your best matches you've ever watched look like they were filmed on a potato.
Yeah. Well, it kind of brings together the like the millennial wrestler to the boomer wrestler, because they also watched it on really crappy tapes that were probably saved from a fire at some point. So yeah, I think that's like a universal wrestling experience.
It also makes me gutted for you, because as an Eddie fan, because you were watching every other pay-per-view. You'd got Rumble 04 and Mania 20. So you
missed a lot.
Skipped Eddie beating Brock in 2004.
You put that together really quickly. I missed that. Yeah. I didn't see that. So I actually, I didn't really, like, other than what was mentioned on the shows leading up, I didn't have context at WrestleMania 20 for the ending with Benoit and Eddie. Because I was like, oh, yeah, no, I guess, I and I'll, at the time, because I wasn't reading dirt sheets and stuff, I didn't know they were friends. I was like, oh, that's neat. They had the SmackDown champion come and congratulate the Raw champion. That's cool. But yeah, no, I missed a lot of context.
Was when it comes to growing up, you mentioned your parents, then obviously your dad, a well-established star of the NFL. Was there, and you yourself have more than earned your stripes in the NFL as well. Was there pressure or an expectation to follow in those footsteps to begin with?
Not pressure. I think what's cool about having a dad that was, you know, in the NFL and kind of had a job that normal, like just normally isn't what people do. It kind of makes it so that in my head, it was never like not an option. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a pro football player. And I wanted to be, after I started watching wrestling, I was like, I'll do football and then I'll become a pro wrestler. And because of that background of having a dad who was just a pro football player, it was kind of normalized for me. It just became something where I was like, I will pursue it. And I was blessed enough to have done both. So yeah, it kind of breaks down like the mental barriers of, oh yeah, we can't do that. It's where that's for people over here. I was like, no, it's for anybody can do it. Yeah.
Do you think there was a reality where you continue to pursue that line, or do you think it was always going to eventually lead you to wrestling?
I think it was absolutely always going to lead me to wrestling. I loved football. I loved playing football. In my family, I'm famously somebody who only watches Super Bowls and I only watch them for the commercials. I cannot really watch football unless I'm playing in it. I like watching myself. I'm a huge narcissist. And aside from like actually watching the sport, I don't do that very much. So, but with wrestling, always loved watching wrestling. And go ahead.
No, sorry, I'll let you finish.
There was a point in my football career where I had gotten an injury, and I was like, I can make a decision, because what you can do in the NFL is you can bounce around and you can go to different football teams, and you can make a great living just doing that. And eventually it might pay off with you getting like a starting position somewhere and then you stick. But I took the leap of faith knowing that this is something that I've always wanted to do. This is something that I love. And I was still young at the time and I was still physically capable, which might not have necessarily been the case if I had continued playing football and continued to get, you know, you gradually get more and more injured. That's the nature of any physical business. And I just knew, I was like, okay, I've been lined up perfectly, because I was initially drafted to the Houston Texans, which is what allowed me to meet Booker T at the Reality of Wrestling in Houston. So I was like, it's serendipitous. It's like, this is magic. This is what we're supposed to do. So it led me, my life path has been very a straight line. It feels like it's been all over the place, but like everything, every point on it is very easily connected. It's really cool.
It was always going to be an easy journey, but you just take the scenic route sometimes to
get exactly. Sometimes you go around, sometimes you check out the mountains. It's yeah.
How do you think your dad would have got on in wrestling?
I think my dad's got a great personality, and he's getting a better personality, a more wrestling personality as he gets older. I've got young parents, but they're getting older now. And it's, you know, parents, when they get older, they stop caring as much. So you become more of like, you kind of generally become more and more of a cartoon character. I think he would have been great at it. It was really funny when, I felt like I needed to, in the same way that I needed to justify getting every other pay-per-view just so that I didn't feel like I was like taking advantage of their trust. I felt like when I stopped playing football as a grown adult with a daughter at that point, I had to go to my dad and I was like, listen, dad. And I prepared him a sheet and I was like, look at this. This is the WWE Performance Center. This is how it lines up with the NFL training program. This is how it lines up with the combine. This is the living that I can make from pursuing this career path. And I explained it to him. He was like, oh, no, this looks legit. Go ahead. Play fight in your underwear.
Nice. That's lovely to hear. Like, he was like, yeah, go for it. Go and...
No, my parents have always been very supportive. My wife has always been very supportive to go on these crazy adventures with me all over the place. So, no, I've been very fortunate. Very drama-free in the regular life department.
So when you started training under Booker T, you had ideas of what wrestling was about because you've been watching it more. How did it change? How were your preconceptions on wrestling based on when you got in there for the first time? What was it, what you expected to be, or was it slightly different?
I think it generally was what I expected. You go through these phases where, you know, like I said, with the Kane Undertaker match, where you watch it as just a fan and you're just kind of enjoying the show. And then at some point after that, you're into it enough where you know what's going on behind the scenes. And then you have like an idea of what like the politics and stuff are. And you have like this vision of your head of what it would be. There is no way to fully understand what it is until you're in it, I think. But at the same time, a lot of stuff just makes sense. Like afterward, it's like you look at it and it's like you've learned the language already and you're like, oh yeah, no, I get what they meant when that got out, kind of thing.
We talked about how Booker T made you the Black Great Muta, yes. one of many great decisions that he would have made guiding awesome. Your career. Is there a piece of advice or a conversation that you had with Booker T that you always will remember?
One I will always remember, which I'm sorry, Booker. I've gone against it at some point is, one time I did a radio show with Booker and he told me, kid, never let them know that you're married. You're a good looking kid. Everybody's going to want to be with you. Never let them know that you're taken. At some point it got out and I couldn't put that genie back in the bottle, but, the biggest actual lesson that I learned from Booker, which I'll always maintain, is that when you're doing something, it doesn't matter if it's technically right, as long as it looks cool. As long as it looks cool, nobody cares about, you know, it, with Booker, it's the, you know, all of that, sure, it doesn't make sense that you do that in the middle of a professional fight. But like, as long as it looks cool and as long as people vibe with it, they will always justify it in their heads. There's a reason why nobody questions why you Irish whip somebody and they go off the ropes and they come right back. It's because it works. So stuff that works, it just works. So to find your, at the time for me, it was find my Nico Nico knee, which made no sense. people vibed with it. It was cool.
But that's it. And that is exactly what Booker was saying. Find something that looks cool that people get. And wrestling is inherently bollocks anyway.
It is. It really absolutely is. We take it so serious, like that's the thing. You can't. It's very serious. People live and died by this this art form. And, you know, there's nothing in this world that I love more than professional wrestling. But the moment that you forget that you are play fighting in your underwear, like my dad said, my great uncle asked my dad what I was doing for a living. And he said, oh, he's a pro wrestler. And he's like, you can make money play fighting in your underwear. At the end of the day, half of the world thinks that's what the case is. And you cannot take it that seriously. You have to be able to go out and let yourself be a silly gimp or a male model or do whatever you want and put your full commitment into it, because it's like you said, it's not a word I say, but it's bollocks.
It's bollocks. It is.
Wrestling is absolutely bollocks. And it's at its best when it's bollocks.
I think it's the best when it's bollocks.
It can be cool when it's serious, but like, it's a variety show. Monday Night Raw is a 3-hour show. It's got room for got room for serious stories. It's got room for drama. It's got room for romance, and it's got room for silly garbage.
That's it. Let's pick two more guys fighting in their underwear for you to look at whilst you're on an island. Brennan, let's pick your second match. It sounds great like when that. You say it like that.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
That's perfectly reasonable. Yeah. What's your second match going to be then, sir?
My second match is going to be, now I'm not sure which one. If I were to tell you to go look it up, it's the Great Muta against Jushin Liger. And it's the one where his mask gets ripped off and his top gets ripped off and Jushin Liger becomes Kishin Liger. That was the match that made me fall in love with Japanese professional wrestling, because at some point I realized, oh, this can be anime too. That was like a third eye awakening moment for me.
Was that the first outing of Kishin Liger?
I think it was the first time Kishin Liger appeared.
Wow.
And obviously, because I watched it on YouTube in 180p, I don't know exactly the order of things, but I just know that Muta and Liger had been feuding for a very long time. And this was like another one of those culminations. And this obviously was a longer and more intensive match than Kane and Undertaker. But they built up to this match and it built up to this moment. And it was so cool. It was so cool.
I believe through the power of the internet, it is October 20th, 1996. That took
that. Place. I know it's 96. I know, because when I've gone back and looked at it again, I've looked up the one from 96.
Because because the Kishin Liger thing, I believe, came about because he thought he was fighting Keiji Muta, but he was fighting the Great Muta.
Yes.
So it was that was a swerve for Jushin Liger. So
and it's so freaking Dragon Ball Z, where it's like, no, you thought you were fighting Goku, but you're fighting Super Saiyan Goku. And it's like, well, then I need to find my own perfect cell form to fight your Super Saiyan Goku. It's so good.
And this is why, Brennan, why I stand by wrestling is beautiful and it's bollocks.
Yes.
Because it's the idea of how you're fighting me, but I've put face paint on.
But I've got a mask.
Oh, that's it, you're dead. It's again an iconic moment from WWF in 2000 when Mankind says to Triple H, you're not fighting Mankind, you're fighting Cactus Jack.
It's me, but more hardcore.
It's me with a different shirt on. No. But we say it, and please, if you're listening, don't misconstrue it. We say this with nothing but love, admiration,
nothing but love
respect,
and respect.
And
it's fun. It's my career. It's got me my house. I love professional wrestling, but I love comedy too. Like, comedy is a joke. Me and Mansoor have always said we are God's greatest clowns, and we will clown with the absolute best of them, no matter what. And there's no misconstruction about what we are and what we do, but no, it's beautiful. It's beautiful in that way, because it's awesome that something that can be so silly can also make you feel so like emotional. It's like the full spectrum of things is in professional wrestling, which is awesome.
Tell us why the Great Muta, of all the wrestlers that you were watching in 180p, stood out to you from Japan.
I think it was the face paint, or at the time in that match it would have been, was he, what, I don't know, he was wearing the mask by then, right?
I believe he had the mask, and I believe he had a snake around his neck, or a dragon around his neck.
He just looks so cool. He looked like a Power Rangers villain.
Yeah,
he looks so cool. And I got to awesome full circle moment this year. I was at the Hall of Fame, and I got to meet Muta, and I was there for his Hall of Fame induction. And it was, I won't forget it, because I was sitting next to Tommy End. He was there too. And we were just sitting there watching him get inducted. And we were like, this is so cool. This is what it's all about. Is this guy who really didn't have that. I mean, he was in WCW, but his American presence is completely dwarfed by his, you know, his accolades in Japan. But here he is being recognized for this bullock sport, but by this international audience. One of the things that I'm going to have written on my tombstone, which I never would have thought coming would have happened, is I had a match with Shinsuke Nakamura, his last match before he went to Japan and had his had Muda's last match. So in the lore of Brennan, I tuned up Shinsuke to beat Muda.
That's my
headcanon. He won. He didn't do the kiss on me, but he won. He probably thought of that while wrestling me, as Masai.
He had to step up to beat you.
Yes.
And in doing so, stepped up to beat Muta.
I was his hyperbolic time chamber. That's what I was to Shinsuke.
If you can be one thing in your wrestling career, it is a hyperbolic time chamber.
Yeah, be a timeless building for somebody to train in.
For someone to walk around for half an hour and buy time for everybody else.
Yes.
Whilst you learn a new move. Your WWE years, a variety of things take place.
A veritable variety. You started at the top of the show listing all of my names, half of which I got in WWE. Yeah, right. I was with WWE for almost 8 years. And I joke all the time, or Dijak in NXT jokes with me all the time, that I'm basically Mankind at this point, where you've got all the... I could do the different faces of Mace in such a short period of time because I've done everything they've asked of me in that time period.
When they came to you and said, we want you on the commentary team for Raw, was that part of the plan as far as you were concerned, or was this a side quest?
That was a side quest, 100%. I had... the way I got that job, that gig, was my friend John LaQuasto, who's a comedian. Go check out his special. It's on YouTube. It might be released by the time this gets out.
The funny thing is, I'm actually chatting to John on Wednesday. What
have Shut
you
up!
Said that happening?
Well, there know, you go. Right? Yeah. Yeah, no, me and John go way back because we used to do podcasts before I even started wrestling. When I was with the Texans, I would do a podcast with them all the time. But when he was with WWE, he was at the Performance Center, and they didn't really have the infrastructure to train up a new commentator. And they had a recording booth, and they have everything you need to do it. But in terms of, like, they didn't have like a commentary coach there, or they didn't have necessarily the setup. All you could do as somebody who wanted to be a commentator, which is what John wanted to do, was go into a booth, watch matches, and record your commentary over it. And then you could send it to Michael Cole or whatever to get, critiques and figure out what exactly you need to tweak. But the problem was John didn't have anybody to do it with. So me, John, and even Mansoor would jump in sometimes. We would just get in a three-man booth, a bunch of like main event matches and 205 Live matches. And somehow one of those recordings got out to corporate, and it got to Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman was taking over as the head of creative for Raw at the time. And he wanted a whole fresh coat of paint on everything. He's like, we're going to redo everything, but also have Jerry the King Lawler. But so he wanted a new commentary. He wanted a new set. I think that was when they got like I think the SmackDown commentary table was on the floor, but the Raw commentary table was on the entrance. I used to get blown up all the time because the pyros would go off right behind me and I had to like run back to open up the show. But he heard it and he was like, this guy's got something. They told me. They didn't tell me. Vic told me they've got you fingered to be the lead color commentator on Raw. And I was like, why? So I had a month to train up and learn how to do that. And it was cool. It was a completely different experience. But at that time I was like, I didn't expect to go this way, but I love this business. I still got to work with, you know, all the great wrestlers that were in WWE. And I was ready to just go in that direction. Cause after my first Raw, Cole walked up to me and Vic and he was like, you guys are going to have this job for the next 20 years. And I was like, oh, well, I guess this is what I'm doing now.
But it wasn't your dream to begin with. You were sort of circumventing John's dream.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it wasn't my dream, but my dream was to just be involved in wrestling.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, I'm glad that I got to, because one of the hardest things about being a color commentator, when you're not to the audience, to the Monday Night Raw audience, I wasn't a wrestler. When you think of a colored commentator, you think of King, you think of Corey Graves, you think of guys, JBL, guys that the audience can be like, that guy wrestled. That guy knows what it feels like to be in wrestling. So like you can say, oh, I've been in this hold before, my goal, you know, that's the stuff that they expect from a colored commentator. And because I was a wrestler, but I wasn't a wrestler for the 2 million people watching Raw, it was quite the challenge to try and get that point across. But no, the more I did it, the more comfortable I got. And I had a blast sneaking in anime references and popping Twitter every once in a while. But yeah, no, I was disappointed when it got taken away, but then it just became an opportunity to come back and actually work. So
because it was you, yeah, you were there. Then you got put through the table by Brock Lesnar, and you've mentioned before how Brock came up and very politely explained to you what an F5 was before he did
yes.
it, which is very sweet.
Like I had no idea.
I'm Brock. I'm a wrestler.
Yeah. He walked up to me and was like, "I guess we're doing a little business tonight." And I was like, "Yeah." I heard that I'm getting put through the table, and he was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Okay, I'm gonna. It's called an F5." I was like, oh, please go on, Mr. Lesnar.
And you're picturing your copy, you holding your copy of Here Comes the Pain for the
play. Yeah, exactly.
Go on, young Lesnar.
Another full circle moment. I think my creator wrestler in Here Comes the Pain did an F5. So he explains to me, I'm going to get you up on your shoulders in a fireman's carry, and I'm just going to put you over my head. You're going to take a belly bump on the table. I was like, okay. I think I can do that for you. And God bless Brock Lesnar. Maybe it's because he didn't realize I was so big until I stood up and was like looking at him. But he felt the need in the moment when we did it live. He was like, oh, I got to protect this guy's size. So he hits me a couple of times before he gets me. I was like, if Brock Lesnar wants to put me up on his shoulders and put me in an F5, he can just do it. And shoot, if it was a shoot, he could just do it. But no, he was like, oh, this guy's kind of big. I better put him down first.
Was there ever a conversation about this leading to something? Or was this just a way of getting you off the announce table?
I heard, when it happened, it was not a way to get me off the announce table. I heard that I was coming back. I had assumed that I would be back the next week. I actually had gone to the airport and had trouble. There was like it was a show in the UK, and I was having trouble with my international travel. Like there was something wrong with the passport or something like that. And then they ended up just saying, "Oh, don't worry, just don't come. We're gonna write you out for this week anyway to sell the attack from last week." So I was like, "Okay, I'm just selling the attack." And even at the time, they were mentioning, they were like, "Oh yeah, no, Dio's dead. But he'll be back." it became a couple of weeks where they're like, "Oh yeah, you're gonna keep selling the attack." I was like, "Okay," and he's like, "Okay, yeah, we're not gonna pursue this anymore. But thank you for what you did, but we're gonna go in a different direction." So I don't know if it was meant to be a write off, or I've always had a theory that Vince saw the same, like the sizes, because it was very difficult. Here's something a lot of people don't know. With WWE and specifically the production angle, which this gave me like a really good window into, was they're very particular about how like shots are framed, how people are positioned. One of the big issues with our commentary team was because I'm so tall, and actually, Vic was also very tall. Vic's like 6'4". He's like a 6'4", slender man skeleton.
He's a beast, isn't he?
Yeah. It's weird. He's just you wouldn't think of it because you look at him and he's like the Crypt Keeper. But like at the end of the, like, I love you, Vic. But he's really tall. I'm 6'8". I'm even taller. And then King, I don't know. I don't want to put King's shoot height out there, but he's significantly shorter than me. So the issue with framing, when they frame pictures, was when they frame like on camera shots, was you had like these different levels, and they wanted us all at the same place because they want everybody to be able to look from face to face to face when they're looking at the camera.
So, it was an aesthetics thing.
It became this weird dance where I'm doing a split.
the old Tomspiracy, as we call it.
Yeah, I'm doing the split to get in the shot. Vic is like slouched over. King is on a box. Like it's, I already knew that I was giving him trouble in that regard.
It's like that Whose Line Is It Anyway game. Stand up, yeah. Sit down, bend over.
That's what it was. We were like friggin' all different monkeys doing different dances at the same time. So I always had a theory that like when he saw, he's like, this commentator is a good couple inches taller than Brock and of similar size. Why is he a commentator? Yeah, so I don't know why it ended. There was a moment, we were talking about. There was a moment where I was convinced. I was like, oh, well, I'll be back as a wrestler then, right? Like, I'll be back soon and I'll get revenge or something. Like, there's money in that. I remember it was very cool in the moment because I was like, oh, this is like over. Like, people actually kind of want to see this. People are interested. So I was like, oh, surely they'll take advantage of it. And they didn't, but... I got back to Raw, you know, a couple years later. But yeah, it's weird because you never know, because you're always just kind of out of a loop, and every loop is like close, but not close enough that anybody knows. So in that case, you hear things and then you hear things later. I remember hearing that they were considering it, considering me and Brock at the time. But, you know, plans change.
Plans do. And bless you, you've been a victim of plans change, ISIS, for some time.
I'm the king of plans change.
You are the king of plans change. The thing is, I know there'll be people who want me to talk about retribution. But the thing is, right, you have been such a force of nature, you and Mansoir on Twitch. In the short time since you've gone away, I don't really want to... I want you to share those stories on Twitch, sure, more than here, because we have so many other great things we want to talk about.
Yeah, so check them out on Twitch.
Yes.
Twitch.tv/GreatBlackOtaku. We're streaming all the time because it's kind of our job right now.
That's it. You've got the time now. You've got the level, yes, of time now to do it.
You've got the time. Mondays, at least Mondays and Wednesdays every week, sometimes Fridays.
If you miss hearing Dio Madden's voice on a Monday night, he's sorted, yes, it. You're welcome. Yes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I do want to ask, in the spirit of keeping things like sort of brighter, because there'll be a lot of, there's been a lot said about the run as the faction, the origins, where the brakes fell off and all that stuff. Is there a really positive story that you can share from your time as part of Retribution? Something that you think about and you remember fondly during that bit?
So the thing with Retribution is... And keeping things, like, I'm very appreciative of every opportunity I've got, even if it was tiny to just be on camera. I think there's nothing more valuable than just the opportunity to even be in the background on camera on national TV. But when Retribution started, and it was the little, the little guys in the ski masks, I could tell at the time that everybody thought it sucked. not just online, internally, I could tell that, you know, writers and the people involved, they were like, this ain't it. But I was sitting at NXT, and any opportunity is more opportunity than I had at the time. So I was very excited to try and make something of it. But we all understood, yeah, this ain't it. So one of the stories that I do love about Retribution is, and we've said it before, the Retribution curse is unbelievably bad luck, but the Retribution blessing is incredible resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of had this like, almost like this trenches attitude every time we came to work. And we found out, we were like, okay, they're going to give us a leader today. And we heard before he did that it was going to be Ali. Me and Dijak, we were looking at each other and we were like, you know what? Because we saw the producer going to Ali to tell him that he was going to be the leader of Retribution. And we saw it happening, and I looked at him and I said, how he reacts to this news is going to determine the rest of our careers. And I see Ali in the locker room, and they tell him, I think it was Adam Pearce that told him. He told him that he was going to be the leader of Retribution. And I see him go. And then he came over to us and he was like, all right, let's get to work. And I was like, hell yeah, let's go.
It was a nod. It was like the tongue in the cheek, as if to go, right, off we go.
We were a band of brothers in Retribution.
Phew.
that's why I'm keeping the name Mace, because one of us has to keep that spirit, that Retribution spirit alive. And when we both got released on the same day, Ali texted me and he said, hey man, you doing okay? And I was like, yeah, you too. He said, yeah. And he said, Retribution curse. And I was like, Retribution blessing. We're all gonna make it, baby.
The thing is, what we need now in the world is a Chikara-like promotion to run a King of Trios.
Oh my gosh, I'd live for a Chikara. Oh. We got a chance to work with Mike Quackenbush when at the Performance Center. They had him as a guest coach a couple of times, and me and Mansoor wear such marks for like the strangest wrestling. Right? Like, we love Chikara. We love Impact in, like, 2005. Like, we love Impact in 2010. Like, so, like, our wrestling taste is so eclectic. So it was so cool to work with him. He made me bump myself about 1,000 times because he was like, you're a good athlete, Brennan. Do you think you could do a broad jump elbow? And I was like, yeah, I don't see why not. And when you think about it, it's like, oh, that's not a big deal. But when I was practicing it, I came to realize that when I do a broad jump, because I'm so big, when I do a 1-2-step bound, it's basically like jumping off the top rope. So I was practicing. I think I was practicing on Mansoor. I was practicing this elbow where I was just taking these Mankind bumping myself just over and over again. And it was like, can you do this a little bit different? But he's such like a brilliant mind for the kind of wrestling that we like. We took everything that he said as gospel.
But he's a good, like, he's one of those guys that has a mind for it. And I think it fits so neatly into what you guys were about, which
absolutely
is like, again, the idea of wrestling being bollocks.
It is. It's silly. And you got to find your, how many cool guys do we have in wrestling? You know, at some point, you're not going to be the coolest guy. But you can be the funniest guy, or you can be the prettiest model, or you could be the gimpiest monster, or whatever the heck Mace was. But yeah, it's all about carving that niche, and Chikara was all about that. We'd always hear stories from like Gulak about just how they were, and it's kind of the same thing where it's like, yeah, let's find something that works and then run with it. Let's commit fully into it. Let's be an ant. Let's be an old timey baseball man. Like, I love that stuff.
It's what it's all about. With obviously Retribution and again maximum male models. I know you guys have already spoke so much about that on Twitch, and I know there's more stories to tell. Twitch.tv/greatblackotaku. It's only right that we share it that way. Both very creative groups that had some pushing forward and some pulling back. Morale-wise, how does it feel to find yourself in the middle of that creative power struggle?
It's tough. It's funny how, like, when you're in the machine, it kind of becomes a thing where, oh, we're not the guys that get the push. Like, we're not the guys that get the time to rehearse things, or we're not the guys that get, like, the direct interaction from like Vince or Hunter. And you kind of have that mindset in your head when you're working, and it's a bit demoralizing. But the one time when we first started doing the modeling thing, because this was Vince's fever dream, we were the guys that got the push for one day. We felt it for one day. It was the go home show for Money in the Bank. And there were ladders everywhere. And the producers came out and they said, we got to do the models thing. And somebody was like, well, there's ladders in the way. And it's like, get the ladders out. Vince is on his way down to work on these models walks. And in that moment, we were like, this is it. This is our big break. So it was more demoralizing to lose it, especially the circumstances with how we felt like we did lose it, because it was... just this, there's so much change in WWE in the time that we were active. Like, we always say in our group chat, we always say we existed in the most tumultuous 10-year span of WWE ever. Like, crazy, as high as the highs were in the Attitude Era, as high as the highs were in the 80s, and all the transitional periods in between, nothing has changed more than existing in the period where Vince McMahon stepped down and management changed back. And like, that's never happened. Even in those times, it was always Vince on top. It was always some semblance of the same faces that were keeping things steady and steadying the ship. So existing in that time, and then kind of that being responsible for why, you know, We had that one day, the one day of us being the guys that get the push, and then it being just pulled out. It almost makes you like, is like, oh, I'm freaking Pagliacci. I'm the sad clown. Like, it's funny at this point. This is, it's comedy.
You've been really open so far, and you will be continuing to do so on Twitch, about your WWE run, which is, and the reason it stands out so much is because it's very uncommon when people get let go. And you have those 90 days, people tend to run aground. People tend to stay quiet. They tend just to cash the checks and then make a move out there. But you guys have gone the opposite. Has there been any blowback or reaction from the people within WWE, your former colleagues or otherwise, to the amount that you've been talking about your time there?
No, not really. Like, at least with the boys that we've talked to, are the people who are comfortable enough texting us, it's like, hey man, like, we love your, like, we've been watching the streams and just reminiscing about good times that we had with you. The blowback that I didn't expect was after the first stream we had, some absolute mad lad on Reddit was just like making up stories. He was making up stories that we were telling on the podcast. But what was so bizarre about it was, like, some of them were positive and some of them were negative, but none of them were things that we said. So it was almost like somebody was trying to use the fact that people knew that we had this 4-hour video, then nobody's going to scan through all of it. It was like, well, let me get some points that I want to get across. And like, some of it was bad, and we were like, it's completely made. Like, we were like panicking at the moment, because we were like, the last thing we want to do is make anybody feel like we were sour grapes about anything. We're very thankful for every opportunity we got, and we're of the more positive mindset when it comes to things like this. But now the pushback hasn't been too bad yet. We'll see. But in terms of just hitting the ground running, like, At the end of the day, I got three beautiful daughters. I got a wife. I got to set up for the next thing. And I think I've always been kind of quietly setting up for the next thing. Establishing a Twitch channel, establishing connections with people like you on Twitter and stuff like that. So I kind of always, I didn't always know the exit plan, but the exit plan unfurled before me because the groundwork was already laid. So I'm very grateful that everybody's coming to watch it, watch the streams and enjoy the streams. And I hope they stick with me. But it's been really gratifying to know that people want to hear us, because it's not, you know, not it's people don't necessarily watch everything from everybody that has been released. So to have that interest and to try and keep that going, even if somebody's putting out weird stories about what we said, all attention's good attention, I guess.
I feel like that's more a little trail of breadcrumbs to a bear trap for sort of us aggregators to try and catch us out, because I feel like there would have been a few. I mean, thankfully, I think, frankly, Cultaholic didn't seem to slip up on those banana barrels.
Thankfully,
but you know what? On any other day, we might have done. Any other day. But
I know.
That's
what the whole strategy. I'm completely fine with saying this. We're just ripping off Maven. If you look at Maven's YouTube channel, if you look at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheInsidersTV, you'll see our new thumbnails, blatant Maven ripoffs. We've got one where it's me and Mentor like crying, and it's Vince going like, ah, just inspired. Like we are fully trying to draw in that audience, but we want to do a bait and switch where you think we're going to be shooting hard and be like super bitter guys. And we're just two guys that got the opportunity to travel the world with our best friend and want to talk
about it. Boo!
Be negative.
Stop being nice. Tell us Vince has bad breath. Do something. Boo.
Always smelled like steak.
Yeah, so meat wraps maybe.
Yeah,
but I love how what a twist to the 2023 plot this was, that Maven would become wrestling's
greatest. Who would have thought?
I love it so much.
He deserves it. He absolutely deserves it.
Deserves every single flower that he gets for it. It's so good. One of the things you've shown on your Twitch are these fantastic videos that you put together for pitches for your characters going forward, gimmick changes and such. When pitching an idea to WWE, is it, I don't know whether how much you found it, how much you tested the size with this, is it better to go in with an idea fully formed or an idea that's somewhat fleshed out with the chance of giving a writer within WWE agency over it?
So we've got a lot of great writers, but at the end of the day, one guy makes the decision as to what is put out. So for a long time, the idea was to try and inception an idea into that person's head so that they think it's their idea and then they put it out there as themselves. By the time, especially in kind of like the Hunter era of the show being run, it became much more collaborative, I think. And because we weren't doing anything, and because of the mindset that we had that, well, yeah, we're not the guys that get, you know, nobody's going to come to us with a cool idea, which can be the case. Sometimes you're the guy that just gets the cool ideas. But we were like, okay, let's throw everything at the wall and see how it sticks. And we'll do it on our own dime because we want to do it. This is, you know, and especially like when you're not doing anything, as somebody who wants to entertain and wants to be like, I've done sports. I'm in this business for the pageantry. I want to do the silly stuff. I want to do the character stuff. It's cool to really just stick your head in like a new character or like start brainstorming a new concept. Or for me, Mansoor is an actor. I'm an artist. I draw. I do graphic design and stuff. So when it comes down to like, all right, let's come up with the new pitch. Let's come up with the name. Let's come up with the branding. Let's come up with what it looks like. Let's do, I've got a bunch of concept art of like stuff that I've done. It's like, oh, this is what this is what these characters would look like before we get gear made. That's really expensive. So like just, and it's something to occupy you because you just go crazy when you're waiting. That's kind of what's really exciting about now, is because I get to do all that. And then you just get to see it. It's not even, there's no filter that just stops everything like a brick wall. You'll just get to see all my creativity and stuff flow.
We've seen online Swerve Strickland, among others. Close personal friend, Swerve Strickland. A champion at the bit to work with you in AEW. Now, lots of people will pitch places like AEW and places like Impact Wrestling to you. I think Impact Wrestling would be a great fit for you.
We love Impact. We said Impact was in what the Impact Twitch, which runs all the time. We watch it all the time, was in our stream. And somebody gifted them a subscription. And we realized that they were there. And they were, I don't know what came over us to say, bring us home, baby. We have no affiliation with Impact. We've never been to Impact in any way. But spiritually, in our hearts, we are TNA guys. In our souls. And it's actually really funny because all of the producers for WWE right now are those guys. So like we marked out all of the time, like friggin' Abyss of producing our matches, Petey Williams producing our matches. We were in like heaven just being able to like talk shop with those guys about those days.
Amazing. Bring us home, baby. That should be the message. Impact, Scott D'Amore, if you're listening, bring the lads home. Come on. Get our boys home. This is what you're fighting for, boys.
This is what we're fighting for.
Go out there and wrestle your ratty socks off. Now, away from the obvious, are there other wrestling goals and then non-wrestling goals that you want to be achieving in the next 12 months now that you're away?
So what's cool about not... obviously, the great thing about being in WWE is consistency in terms of, like, stability as a job. But one of the cool things about not being in it is do whatever you want. So I'm really excited to explore all avenues of stuff. I'm really interested in maybe getting into some voice acting, see what opportunities line up there. Some regular acting. I'm sure there's plenty of space for... Man, I saw the One Piece live action and I was like, let me be Arlong. I should have been Arlong. If I was out a year earlier, I could have been Arlong. So just, you know, there's just all of this world and Twitch streams and more wrestling and wrestling in different places, wrestling in different countries. I've gotten to wrestle in Europe a bunch with WWE, but still, the great Black Otaku has never been to Japan. I want to go to Japan. I want to go to Mexico. I want to be myself. You know, like it was cool being these characters of the model and the GIMP, but like at some point, like I want to do my thing as me and let people judge it as me. You know, I've always had to be judged through this filter of, oh, this is a bad idea, but he's making the best of it, or like, oh, this, you know, this is, this will never work or something like that. Like, if it's not going to work, it's going to be my idea that didn't this time. So, I'm excited. I'm excited for spreading my wings, trying all kinds of stuff, doing conventions, going places, meeting people, all that.
Well, we're excited to see what happens. Before we let you off the island, though, we've got your third and final match to get to.
My third and final match. We've done a really good job at weaving in, because there's been a little hint. If you go back upon rewatch, this will be even better upon rewatch, because there's been a little hint about what the next match would be. And in the last segment, we talked about how much we love Impact. Mm-hmm. And my favorite of all time Impact match has gotta be Joe and Kurt. That first one, which also phenomenal match, completely built by that moment where Kurt came out and the headbutt and the blood, and it was I love that. That's like in my spectrum of, you got Kane and Undertaker as just all pageantry, and then you've got Muda and Liger in like the the other world that wrestling can be. And then you've got Joe and Kurt in the actual just athletic execution excellence. Like that's, this is like the kind of, I thought about this a lot when you asked me about three matches, like what encompasses everything I love about pro wrestling, the silliness of getting buried alive, the silliness of being a new person when you have face paint on, and just the stuff that we as performers can do when given the chance to go out for 20 minutes and just have a friggin' knockdown, tear down, awesome match. Yeah, that's my favorite Impact match of all time.
It was one of those matches that felt like the match that lifted Impact or TNA to the next level. Because it was the fact that Kurt Angle was there. Like mm-hmm. that was such a, and Kurt was going through some tumultuous stuff in his personal life, but it was a case of he's on the free market.
Yeah.
Good him in. And you couldn't have picked a better first opponent than Samoa Joe.
And you talk about like legitimizing a brand, legitimizing a promotion, like a guy like Kurt, when he's available, like, of course you get him. Like Kurt in such a short amount of time became a goat. Like that sometimes it's not about just doing stuff for a long time and like consistency. Sometimes it's about just being amazing and picking it up really fast. And that's absolutely what Kurt was, still in the prime, still like, not on the decline enough where you feel like, oh, he's gone over there to, you know, retire. Like this was the guy who was going to have even better matches than he had in WWE at the time over there. And I remember at the time, because at the time I was a little smart mark. I was like, oh, this is WCW moment. This is Kevin Nash coming over. This is the Outsiders coming out and turning the tides. Like we're going to have a real Monday Night War again.
How it felt at the time. It's really
at the time.
It did. It certainly did.
2020. Hey, look,
in the spirit of you sharing your pitches on Twitch, and in the spirit of we need Impact to bring you home, let's pitch your Impact debut, but with the caveat, an E-Fed style caveat, fair play, obviously, and it's got to be as TNA as possible.
Got to be as TNA
as TNA as possible.
So, first of all, the name's got to change. The name's got to be the classic WWE to Impact. What's Joey Samoa doing in the Impact Zone?
What's pepper spray doing in the Impact Zone?
What's pepper spray? Pepper spray. First of all, my name's Pepper Spray. I'm coming in. And how do we TNA this as much as possible?
So I think you're in the crowd and you're staring at the six-sided ring as Pepper Spray. Oh,
yes, it's the six-sided ring all over again.
Six-sided ring.
We're just a short drive to the Impact Zone in Universal Studios. I remember I went on a family vacation when I was a teenager. We went to Universal Studios and we're there, we paid for our ticket and my family is like, let's go on a bunch of rides. And I saw the sign that they were doing an Impact recording, a TNA recording at the Impact Zone. And I said, Mom and Dad, I'm gonna go wait in this line for the rest of the day. I'm going to skip out on doing it. And there was no Harry Potter world at the time. Universal wasn't as good back then. But I was going to wait in line and I was going to go and watch this Impact recording for the rest of the day. And they came back and they picked me up at like 8 o'clock at night because I think they did like three shows at the time. But, man, it was awesome.
Who did you see on that day? Can you remember?
I vividly remember. I remember Team 3D was there. I saw it was like prime Impact time.
What year was because I think I might have gone to a TNA show in Florida around the same time.
Yeah.
Because I remember going in the Impact Zone. I remember where we were originally down the front for the first one. And then we went and sat in some of the bleachers at the back for the next one. I remember looking off to the right and seeing Jim Cornette's office. Like it was in the same sound stage. Would that have been before or after when you went?
That's probably what year would you think that would be?
I think maybe 2000 2009, 2010.
It's probably, it's got to be around, it's got to be at least in that 2000 like 8 to 2010 period. I think I was like maybe about to go to college. So I graduated high school in 2009. So it would have been right around then. That might have been it.
Might have been that one. So we're there basically. So you've come home, pepper spray in the front row, looking at the six-sided ring. Who are you going to jump the guardrail and attack? Which TNA star are you jumping in the guardrail?
What is a dream match right now?
Is it Black Rain or not?
Yeah.
It's one for Jay Hunter to pop to. Oh, meow.
So I was a big Black Rain supporter at the time because I was the rare like super gold dust mark in when he had left WWE. I was like, I used to have a car that was like gold dust adjacent because I thought it was so cool because I'm a big Visual K fan, which is like Japanese hair metal.
Right.
And, so you think about like X Japan, Deron Gray, all of these guys that are just these beautiful men that wear like wigs and makeup. It's very much like hair metal. And I thought Goldust was American Visual K. I was like, oh no, this is brilliant. So I was very excited for Black Rain.
Well, in that case, you should attack Black Rain.
Yes, I attacked Black Rain. I hit him with a black hole slam. I hit him with a... Which I did at a house show.
Of course you did.
Abyss was producing our match. It was the models against probably Hit Row. And as a cutoff, I pulled in Ashanti and hit him with a black hole slam. And I go... Because there's no hard cam at a house show, but there is a camera where the producer can watch. And I look into the camera and I go,
give it the big abyss.
And I gave him the big abyss. And when I got to the back, legit, he was in tears. It warmed my heart so much because he was like, bro, you know, like sometimes we forget that the stuff that we did at that point got out and that people cared about it. And then like seeing that you love that Abyss character and all that is like, man, I love you, bro. I was like,
oh, bless it.
Bless you, Abyss.
Oh, what a guy. Oh, I feel like it should be Pepper Spray versus Abyss.
Yeah. No, I think that is the full circle.
Because then you can do Monsters Ball.
We can do Monsters Ball. I can chicken out of a bunch of thumbtack bumps and walking on shards of glass barefoot. And I'll take the pin. I'll take the black hole slam. I'll put myself in it.
We've done it. Impact, bring him home. It's time. Anyway, look, we've had a lovely over an hour on Cultaholic Island together. You
didn't feel like it.
Oh, it flew by, didn't it? It felt like at least 58 minutes. I want to send people your way. I love the stuff you're doing on Twitch. And I know it's the tip of the iceberg as to what is coming, but let's send them your way. Where can people keep up to date with everything you are doing, sir?
As of right now, you can find me on X, not Twitter, at Great Black Otaku. You can find me in most places, Instagram, all that. Great Black Otaku on Twitch, most importantly. Multiple times a week, three times a week, twitch.tv/greatblackotaku. And if you miss the live streams, you can check them out. The VODs are on YouTube the next day at youtube.com/theinsiders.tv, where we're going to be posting a bunch of vlogs. We're going to be posting clips. We got a lot of fun stuff planned, so we're really looking forward to getting to it.
And Mace Madden coming to a ring at some point next year after Pepper Spray, of course.
After Pepper Spray. Pepper Spray after first, then Mace Madden, yeah.
Brennan, a pleasure, sir. Thank you for joining us on Cultaholic Island.
Thanks for having me.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.